This episode powered by our friends at Strive Labs and the Strive Hub platform, the all-in-one customer relationship management platform built for health and wellness, providing intelligent solutions for clinics and hospitals. Find them online at strivelabs.com.
This is the PT Pinecast, a podcast that talks about physical therapy over beer. Bringing together clinicians, researchers, and forward-thinking PTs in a show that's anything but boring.
Let there be beer!
This is the PT Pinecast with your host, Jimmy McKay.
All right, the next episode of the PT Pinecast starts right now. Our guest tonight, not your average physical therapist, after years of working in the field of strength and conditioning, he went back and got his DPT. The skill set he gained from both of these fields allowed him to improve the sports performance of athletes of all skill levels. His expertise is sought out by high-level athletes in Olympic weightlifting, CrossFit, professional bodybuilding, the NFL, and elite runners and swimmers. And he's also a bit of a social media maven. I want to welcome Zach Long to the PT Pinecast. Zach, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Jimmy. Looking forward to it.
I just want to just put it out there. If you hear any EDM music in the background, my roommates, who are also third-year PT students, are actually just blasting a live refeed of Coachella, so they're letting some stress out because we just got through comps and research day. So if you hear any music in the background, that's what that is.
There will not be any EDM on this side of things. You might hear some serious country music, serious twang.
That was actually going to be one of my questions. We had Tony Gentilcore on the show a bunch of episodes back, and he brought up they used to take over the stereo. People used to get a day. They would pick whatever they wanted to listen to, and Tony was a big EDM guy. Country's your thing? You use a lot of music when you're working with your patients, either in strength and conditioning or PT?
Yeah, typically use Pandora and just have it on a shuffle. Everything from country. I'm also a big Hootie and the Blowfish fan.
Yeah.
Best of the 80s, 90s, so everybody hopefully gets a little bit.
So the day we're actually recording this, some bad news, man. Prince just died.
Yeah.
That's sad.
Yeah, I'm not a very big pop guy, yeah, but that is sad. He's done a lot of great stuff from singing, songwriting. Game changer.
Yeah, I wasn't a huge Prince fan, but I was never like somebody who didn't like Prince, but it's just disappointing when you see someone. He was relatively young, in his 50s. I want to thank everybody who's been listening so far, retweeting, sharing the show, told a friend you're a big help, and that's the only way we spread the message, so we love you for it. And one thing we're working on right now, we've mentioned this before in previous episodes, working on buying a power wheelchair for a peds patient that I actually got to work with in Costa Rica on a service learning trip. Still trying to get to it's those power wheelchairs, not cheap. About 18 grand to get it to Costa Rica for him. So how can you help? Check out ptpinecast.com. You can bid on a Con Ed course from Adam Meekins, Jerry Durham, and Jeff Moore. Strong First Kettlebell gave us a course to auction off. Kinetic Core Dry Needling and Justin Dunaway, a spinal manip course. So if you want to bid on those, you can just hit ptpinecast.com, click on the blog, and all of the money from those courses is going to buy this wheelchair. And you can also find our GoFundMe page. A dollar goes a long way. Plus, we're selling some t-shirts. The shirt design, maybe you'd like this one, Zach. It says, 3 years and many beers, DPT class of 2016. So you can get those for $20.16. And all the money we make from those t-shirts also go in to help buy this pediatric wheelchair, the power wheelchair for our peds patients. So, all right, now we got the homework out of the way. Let's get into it. You are all over social media. That's kind of what drew my attention to you. You're always posting videos. The content is coming to me, which is cool. I mean, I seek out content in terms of exercise, but you're just constantly putting stuff out there. So I want to applaud you for that and for being able to leverage something like social media to your advantage to get really, really good information out. So what prompted you to do stuff like that?
Since I was in physical therapy school, I started a blog and wrote for a long time, and that was more just put my thoughts on paper. It wasn't to promote it or get it out to anybody. It was just a self-challenge to make me stay up to date with stuff and push my limits more and more. And I guess late summer, early fall of last year, I decided that I just really wanted to start spreading my knowledge and providing value to others. It was suggested to me by my sister that I start with a daily campaign, and every day for I think it was like 30 or 45 days, I posted a video or picture on Instagram, and also started doing that on Facebook. And when I got in the habit of it and saw the responses I was getting, I just kept going and haven't stopped since then.
It spreads, and you've got a lot of content on there. You can check him out on Twitter, ZLongDPT, or you can check out his website, and that's kind of what you go by on Twitter is the barbell Barbell Physio. So it's the barbellphysio.com. And you kind of, that's what you become. You become on Twitter what you put out there. And you became the Barbell Physio simply because you did that 30-day challenge and you just put a ton of really cool stuff out there. So kudos to you for doing that.
I think more people would really benefit if they did that. It, like I said, it pushes you to go further and it helps other people. And I think more people, especially young professionals right now, need to realize how much they have to offer, how much value they can bring to the table for people. It's a conversation that I have almost daily with a DPT student that I'm working with right now, that even though you're young doesn't mean you don't have value to contribute to the table.
We were actually just talking in my kitchen before I came up to my room to record this episode, and one of my roommates, David, wanted me to ask you. I had actually seen you bring this up on Twitter before, which was loading patients to actually build strength. And what my roommate had actually asked me, not seeing that tweet, when you're getting people to do barbell moves, how do you convince them that this is something that they can and should be doing? What's your way of making them comfortable with doing stuff they haven't done before?
I'm in a unique situation where I work right now, where I work with a lot of higher level athletes. I have maybe 2 Medicare patients on my caseload. I don't treat workers' comp patients. Pushing the boundaries isn't as difficult for me in this current job as it has been in the past. It makes it a lot easier, you know, when somebody's coming in and they're a high level weightlifter, or, you know, an average CrossFitter or whatever, having them go through a squat isn't that far of a stretch for them. You know, sometimes, yeah, you got to get creative. When I do have an older Medicare patient come in, that maybe one of my athletes has their mom come in or something like that, you got to get creative. And maybe you're not pulling out that implement like a barbell or a kettlebell that scares them. But I still think we can challenge their strength in other ways. So maybe that's some version of a split squat or single leg squat down to a chair. I think we kid ourselves a lot of times when we think that we're actually making patients stronger, and really we're just, making a muscle burn a little bit. And I think if we would go back more to that exercise physiology, well, I won't even call it class, that 1 week of exercise physiology we had in PT school, and you look back at what it takes to actually load somebody to create a hypertrophy response or a strength response, it's pretty significant. If we changed our mindset a little bit and went a little heavier or a little bit tougher, we might get a little bit more traction.
Yeah, I had a patient in my last rotation who is a CP patient, and she'd been in and out of physical therapy her whole life due to her CP. And on the very first day, she said to me, I already know the 6 or 7 exercises you're going to give me. You're going to give me some of those rubber bands, and you're going to make me do this and this and this. And she could pretty much just run through a routine already. And I just kind of looked at her. I said, nope, we're going to have you doing squats, and we're going to have you lifting things, and we're going to have you doing some different moves that you haven't done before. And I just lucked out because she was up for the challenge. She was excited for it. But I think that people do have this perception, especially this patient who'd been in and out of PT her whole life, this perception that we don't necessarily do that. But as you brought up, to actually hypertrophy a muscle, you've really got to push it.
Yeah, exactly. And that brings up a great point. I think a lot of times people come into physical therapy with preconceived notions about what it is. Maybe they've been to 1 or 2 or 3 clinics that all treat the same way. Everybody's doing the daggum sideline clam,
right,
which is a fine exercise at times. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, anytime somebody goes in with back pain or leg pain, knee pain, that daggum exercise is so overprescribed. And one thing that I really try to do day in and day out is when I have a new patient come into my office, especially if it's somebody that's been somewhere else, it's my goal to have them leave saying that was a different experience than what I expected. I've never told patients that that's what my goal is, but it's something that I hear regularly, is that things were different than when they've been other places. Usually that's good.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's bad.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're going to get a different experience, and you're going to push them. If they're not up for that, then they're not really invested in their own recovery, I guess, or they're not convinced that that is the way to actually get better.
There's definitely times where people won't mesh with my system, and that's okay. I'm not scared of referring that person out. Obviously, again, I'm not loading everybody with a barbell or kettlebell. I can get them stronger other ways. You know, if they don't fit into my mold and that's not going to be a bad fit or leave a bad taste in their mouth for what physical therapy is, oh man, I'll refer them out in a second.
Yeah.
I'd rather refer out and be the smart PT that referred out wasn't in my wheelhouse versus, you know, dragging somebody through 10 visits that feel pretty confident in the start they're not going to fit what I do.
No, it's a great point. What are we drinking tonight, Zach?
Four Roses.
Four Roses. Bourbon. Oh, yeah, that's a great bourbon. I went to a bourbon tasting not long ago and got introduced to the Four Roses. I'm going Shock Top, the Belgian White, because it was on sale, and I'm still in PT school, so I'm keeping it cheap. crazy exercises. You're always sharing those things online. We mentioned your Twitter feed, which is at ZLongDPT, but you've also got an Instagram feed, which is at The Barbell Physio. So you got crazy exercises for patients. I like when you do some progressions and you show like some variations of things, because I didn't have the exercise background and I'm just picking it up now in PT school. I look for those things, different variations. Like you said, clamshell is a great exercise sometimes, but that can't be the only thing that we're giving to patients. So where do you look to find these things? Are you coming up with them yourself or what?
My dad was a high school strength and conditioning coach, football coach for 30 years. And he was one of those guys that just always came up with crazy crap. He would find a way to take some machine that was a piece of junk that didn't do anything good and turn it into a great exercise. So some of that's just how my brain works genetically, I guess. I'd say a lot of it is, you know, I see what other people are doing. I pay attention to what a guy like Dave Tilley's doing, who's putting out awesome content nonstop as well. And I try to apply that to the patient population that I work with. So it's just a plug stuff in, alter things to fit my needs. And I'm just always trying to think of what's the next best way to get the response with an exercise that I want.
I think part of the problem in PT school for myself, and I can just speak for myself, is we're always stuck on trying to get the right answer. So I think we're in that mode of, I need to answer the right answer on this question, because everything's a test in PT school, that when we get out in the clinic, it's time to start prescribing exercises. We're looking for the right answer instead of saying, well, there's a bunch of right answers, but let me figure it out by putting the patient through some stuff and seeing what responses I get.
You can get in traps all the time of thinking, man, this exercise isn't perfect because of this and this. Honestly, man, you're never going to find the perfect exercise to fit anything. And as long as you're getting somewhat of a decent response and you sell enough to the patient that this exercise is going to provide value to get you better, then we don't need to be worried about having the perfect exercise or getting in the way of our head. Man, I prescribed so many crappy exercises over the past few years.
You mentioned your dad being a strength and conditioning coach, football coach for 30 years. That's got to be a cool resource to be able to tap into and just to have, first of all, been around for so long and then being able to say, you know what, I've got this. I'm sure he's got some just great ways of looking at things, like you brought up, just finding a machine that wasn't supposed to do what he made it do. But is that what got your mind going? That's got to be really helpful.
Yeah, it's always helpful to have somebody like that to bounce ideas off of. For somebody with no medical training, he can still think about issues. You know, he's been around every sports injury there is, and I can call him up anytime I want and say, man, I've got somebody coming in with some shoulder instability, and they're trying to get back to be a high school quarterback. What do you think we can do to really challenge stability a different way, because he's not responding to this. It's great free resource. We also have a lot of debates about stuff too sometimes. So, you know, it kind of goes both ways there, because we see things a lot differently as well.
Yeah, that's a good thing though, because you get to look at the same patient with a fresh set of eyes when you've got to explain it to someone who isn't necessarily in front of that patient.
Absolutely.
You brought up stability, a topic I'd seen on Twitter, testing stability versus mobility, not just giving everybody some mobility moves. So making sure you work on stability, do you see that being neglected a lot more?
Well, the big buzzword right now in the fitness world and the strength conditioning world is mobility. As much as I like using some of those mobility tools, I have tend to found for me, and maybe it's just my bias as somebody that worked in strength for such a long time, I've tend to find that doing certain strength movements will produce the same mobility changes that different stretching and mobility movements will. So I want to look at things from a different perspective and see if that gets a better response quicker. For me and my patient population, just being young athletes, a lot of the people that come to me, they've already spent the time doing foam rolling, stretching, joint band distractions, things like that. So they've knocked out those mobility issues. And a lot of times I can just come straight to the table and say, I already know that this isn't a strictly mobility issue because this person's been doing it. There's nothing else mobility wise that I'm really, really going to do. That just kind of leads to a little bit of bias in my thinking that I'm going to try some stability stuff instead. And it's crazy. Stability movements can change motion so quickly. For instance, a side plank can really rapidly change your hip rotation range of motion. And that's a trick from a great personal trainer, Dean Somerset, in Canada. But there's just tons of examples of things like that where just a simple stability movement can instantly change your even what is a passive range of motion limited.
You bring up Dean Somerset. You've got a really cool event that's going to be going on very, very soon. I want you to talk about what caused you to put this event on. I've never heard anything like this. I'm talking about the Global Performance Summit. It's going to be May 9th through the 16th. You got free registration right now. I want to throw the website out there. It's globalperformancesummit.com. You've got some names. You got some heavy hitters, man. Charlie Weingroff, Dan John. You're going on and on. How'd you get everybody everybody to come together and describe what this event is actually going to be like. What's it going to be?
A friend of mine, a personal trainer that I work with a lot and have a great relationship with, he recently ran a global swimming summit where he got some of the top names in swimming together and just produced a lot of great content for people of the swimming world. And we got to talking and said, man, we need to do this for the fitness world as well. And we just started reaching out to these guys. You know, it wasn't hard. All of these guys are big names in the industry, but they also care about pushing fitness and rehab to the next level. So it wasn't hard to convince them to join in and help others learn more. And so it's online summit that is absolutely free to register and attend, talking about a variety of fitness topics from, again, some of the best names in fitness. So instead of you having to travel halfway across the country to listen to all these guys, you can sit at home at your computer and watch.
Yeah, that's what made my ears go up. I'm like, well, this summit sounds cool. The names are big, but where is it? How much is it going to cost? And you eliminated two barriers right there off the bat. How much? It's free. How far do I have to travel? I don't. I can just click in. Is it going to be like webinars, online classes, or what's it going to look like? What's it going to feel like?
Yeah, they're just a bunch of webinars. It's me and Chris sitting down and having just general discussions with these guys over a variety of topics. Very biased towards the fitness world rather than the rehab world. But there's also a lot of great content for those, you know, that are in just like the straight PT world. For instance, one of the ones that we've pre-recorded is Nick Winkleman, who's a strength and conditioning coach and used to work for Exos and's now moved on. He gave a talk on cues for better coaching, talked about how we can get people moving better with combining verbal, visual, tactile cueing, how we can better incorporate variability in practice to increase learning more. And while I learned a lot of that stuff in PT school, it was an awesome reminder of how much more I can be doing with my cues to make patients move better. Man, that was like an hour-long talk that just blew my mind, and I've already re-listened to it once, and I'm sure I'm going to re-listen to it a couple more times because it was just amazing. And the whole time we were talking, I was sitting there thinking, man, there was five exercises or five patients earlier today that I missed the boat on a little bit that I could have helped by making this one little minor tweak.
It's fun when you start doing conversations like that, like you were just talking about the conversation with Nick Winkleman. That's what gets me fired up. You know, I knew we had an interview tonight, and all day long I'm kind of walking around during the day going, I wonder where this one's going to go. And I get pumped to have these conversations because you stumble on things that you're like, oh, I can definitely use this, or ooh, I didn't expect that. I'm going to make sure I remember that one, and I'm going to break that out when the opportunity presents itself. So looking forward to something like that. I think, you know, you had brought up it's more geared toward the fitness world, but I think PTs, I mean, if you're going to take advantage of content like that from these names, you'd be really, really lazy to miss something like this. So online, again, Global Performance Summit .com, and you're going to kick that thing off coming up on May 9th. And again, the registration is free. You don't have to rent a hotel room. You don't have to travel. You don't have to take your shoes off and go through TSA. None of that stuff. It's right there to your computer. One of the guys who's going to be on the roster is Scott Iardella. He's big in maximizing training with kettlebells. And I don't want to throw you off. I won't say where it was, but I was at a clinic recently, and the heaviest thing in the clinic was 10 pounds. 10 pounds. I could have had the patients carrying chairs with books on it, I guess. That would have been more than 10 pounds, but that's all I had. But you like to utilize barbells and kettlebells in the clinic. Of course, your moniker, you know, the barbell physio. Why are we so scared sometimes in these situations when we know better? We're PTs. Why are there still clinics out there where the heaviest thing in there is a 10-pound dumbbell? Why are we so scared? Where are we shying away from?
Do we really know better?
I guess you're right. Do we know better? I guess not.
I think there's probably a lot of people that don't remember or don't know or were never taught how much we can load patients. I think it's probably a big gap that we have right now in the field. And we also have a lot of people that I think believe that our job is to get people moving better, get them pain-free, and our job isn't to bridge that gap, and that then we're just supposed to pass somebody on to a strength conditioning coach or a personal trainer. And while there's certainly times that we should do that, there's also times where you can say, man, we've got you moving pretty well. We've got your pain under control. Like, let's get you going under load and let me help coach you through that a little bit. I love the kind of physio coach hybrid model that a lot of people are starting to adapt right now. That's what I love doing day in and day out. I get to combine that strength and conditioning world that I used to be in with the physical therapy world.
Yeah, just had Danny Mata on the show, and he loves that. He loves that term, the hybrid strength conditioning physical therapy role. If you're in a situation like that, if you're a student or maybe you're a fresh PT, that's the place you're working. How do you approach that to say to the clinic director or, you know, your supervisor, your mentor there? there? How do you approach that in a tactfully way and say, we need heavier things because I want to start pushing some of these patients? What's a good way to approach that?
One of my, and this wasn't my goal in my physical therapy clinical rotation, but one thing that I did back in one of my later rotations was I did a research review where I went through the top glute exercises out there that's been published in the research, which of course was a lot of that clams, double leg glute bridges, things like that, that I don't think are quite in the true strength realm. But then I also took it a step further and said, this is what the research says. This is what the strength and conditioning world's currently doing. We're loading people with barbell hip thrusts and deficit split squats, things like that. And I proposed, you know, a variety of different exercises that might be better for the strength world. And so it was great content that was provided using the PT research and the PT lingo, and then me just, you know, subtly suggesting, hey, let's maybe adopt some of this stuff too that could be helpful.
Yeah, we need to do that more often. I like that approach too, because you kind of came with the solution. You didn't come with a problem. The problem being, well, there's no heavy stuff here. How do we get a little bit better? You came with a solution, and it was backed by research and good information. So I like that approach. That's a good idea.
That was a really fun presentation, man. I got to talk about strength.
Yeah, and that's what we should be talking about when it's appropriate for our patients. We should be talking about that S word. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back with Zach, we're going to talk about blood flow restriction training. That thing was just on ESPN. It's catching some buzz and getting some people to pay attention. Building an online presence brand as a young PT, because this guy is doing it right now as the barbell physio. And we're going to talk about a dirty word in physical therapy, the C word, chiropractors. Back in a minute with Zach on the PT Pinecast. Don't move.
It's time for the PT Final Exam Pop Quiz. Keeping you on your game before and after the NPTE. Here's today's question.
Can you share NPTE items after you take your exam?
We'll be right back with the answer of today's PT Final Exam Pop Quiz.
This episode powered by our friends at Strive Labs and the Strive Hub platform, the all-in-one customer relationship management platform built for health and wellness, providing intelligent solutions for clinics and hospitals using their patient portal, automation tools, and content management system to design custom care management workflows that drive improved patient outcomes, automate outreach, boost engagement, find loyal customers, and close the loop to manage customer retention, identify trends, and make changes that will grow your clinic. Find them online at strivelabs.com. That's strivelabs.com.
Okay, here's today's PT Final Exam Pop Quiz one more time.
Can you share NPTE items after you take your exam?
And the answer to the PT Final Exam Pop Quiz is...
No, absolutely not. No, with big exclamation points. Items from the examination cannot be shared with any person for any reason. Don't share any of those exam items after you take the NPTE.
Thanks for playing along at home, boys and girls. Remember, for your NPTE test prep, all you need is the PT Final Exam. Find them online at ptfinalexam.com/pintcast. Working out his orbicularis oris until failure. Jimmy McKay on the PT Pintcast.
And we're back on the PT Pintcast. We are talking with Zach Long on Twitter at ZLongDPT. Check out his website, thebarbellphysio.com. And I do want to mention that summit again in case you didn't catch the website, globalperformancesummit.com. That's going to be totally online, totally free. You can check that out from May 9th to the 16th at that website. We mentioned a dirty word, Zach, and I know you've reloaded the bourbon for this one, for the second set. The dirty word in physical therapy. There are mortal enemies working with in a clinic that has a PT and a chiropractor. I mean, that's like crossing the enemy line, right? Or is it?
When I started, I was one PT versus six chiropractors, man. I was having a lot of fun there. You know, it's something I never thought I would do, because I came out of physical therapy school with the mindset that a lot of people have, where we thought that, you know, chiropractors are just rack and crack. Unfortunately, you had some very stale beliefs in some parts of that profession. But I mean, let's be honest, there's also plenty of people in our profession with very stale beliefs that aren't doing stuff perfect themselves. Got connected with a chiropractor that was in my area through Twitter and started speaking to this guy. And we were talking about the selective functional movement assessment and analyzing movement and doing more than just, you know, on his side, rack and crack, on my side, doing just these BS exercises and seeing people three times a week for 6 to 10 weeks. We just really connected on that point of, you know, our beliefs aren't exactly the same, but what we really care about is getting people and specifically athletes better as fast as possible. And it has been nothing short of amazing working with these chiropractors. And I'm fortunate enough now I've got a couple other physical therapists working with me, which has been a lot of fun too, to learn from some PTs that have very different experiences and backgrounds than I do as well. It's awesome to combine all of those tools under one house.
I think we go into it and people just bring up chiropractors and they're not physical therapists, so they must be the enemy. But since you got a chance, when you said when you started, you were one PT to six chiropractors, what are the similarities in their beliefs and their directions and their approaches, and what are the differences? Maybe if we start there, if we can actually start understanding the similarities and differences, we get a better handle on where they're coming from.
So everybody that I work with has a very movement-based bias. They're looking at how do you function when you squat or when you do a hip hinge or when you lift your arms overhead. And then we all pretty much want to break it down, whether it's through something like the SFMA, the Selective Functional Movement Assessment, or another tool. Is it truly a mobility issue, tissue shortening, whatever, or is it motor control stability? They might attack it with maybe some DNS type principles, where I might use some barbell back squats. But for the most part, it's looking at movement. How do we improve movement? And there are times where stuff is way more strength based than what they do, because unfortunately right now in the chiropractic world, they don't get really reimbursed for therapeutic exercise. All they get reimbursed for is manual therapy, and that kind of limits these guys in what they can do. And I had a discussion just this week with one of my colleagues, and he's like, man, I wish I could do what you're doing. I wish I could take people and do my manual therapy and then get up and go do a kettlebell swing or something like that. But they don't get reimbursed for it, which is unfortunate.
What are some more of the similarities? That being one of the differences in terms of what are some of the similarities?
I think we all really value the importance of hands-on treatment as well. And, you know, we might have slightly different viewpoints on what manipulation or adjustment does, or we might have a little different viewpoints on what like pin and stretch or active release, whatever you want to call it, does to soft tissues. We do understand that patients coming to see us believe that a lot of that manual therapy stuff is going to help them. And we can debate all day long about what manual therapy does or doesn't do right now, which is the nonstop, almost annoying argument that I hear every day on Twitter. But you know what? If patients truly believe that that's going to help them, and I use a manual therapy technique that makes them feel a little bit better and allows me to perform some sort of exercise or load them better or something like that, who the heck cares what it really does? I'm not selling, you know, manual therapy as a golden ticket. I'd never tell patients that this manual therapy is going to fix you. Say it might help you move a little bit better. It might help us be able to get you doing an exercise. And that's the viewpoint they have as well.
I would be a bad host if I didn't ask the guy who's always putting out exercise content, videos, and different variations of stuff, some of your favorite exercises. What do you like? What do you do when you're working out and you want to vary some stuff up? What are some of your favorites?
When I'm working out, I'd say, I love squats. I love barbell back squats, front squats, you know, more of like a health aspect and just having me move better, feel better. It's going to be the goblet squat, where you're holding a weight right in front of your chest, usually a kettlebell or a dumbbell. That tends to be, for me, one of those things that really just makes my overall mobility, motor control, whatever you want to call it, feel better. And I love lots of overhead work. So whether that's doing snatches, where you take a barbell from the ground to overhead in one movement, or doing, you know, kettlebell overhead carries, or throwing a barbell overhead with bands hanging off of it and all kinds of weights and doing some crazy stability stuff.
You mentioned your dad was a strength and conditioning guy, football coach. Was that your sport in high school and when you were younger? Did you play some other stuff too, or what?
I played football, and I also did pole vaulting for a few years. Oof. And then I got to where I weighed too much for pole vaulting. I made it to the state track meet one year, and I had to go run for 30 minutes to make weight. I decided that I was done trying to ever have to cut weight for anything ever again.
I had no idea. They have weight limits in pole vaulting? Is it because of the pole? Is that the obvious choice? Or
yeah, so the pole essentially, it bends and catapults you over the bar.
Uh-huh.
So if you weigh more, you can bend the pole a little bit more, and that'll be an advantage. So if you weigh 185 pounds and you're using a 175-pound pole, you've got a little leg up. And I happened to weigh 180 pounds, and my pole was 175, and it was the only one I brought that day, so I had to go run 5 pounds off.
Wow. Wow, I had never thought about that. That's cool. some buzz in terms of some new treatments. There's always something, and you're on Twitter as much as anybody, and you know, talking about dry needling or anything new, blood flow restriction training. There's just a really cool piece done by Stefania Bell and Johnny Owens, looking to have both of those guys on the show very soon, talking about blood flow restriction training. They were working with Dwight Howard and kind of giving just a real good introduction into what people are doing with this and how it works, because I had heard of it, but it was cool to see it done in such a way on ESPN with Dwight Howard and actually watch it in practice. What are you thinking about this? What's your experience with this?
So I have gone through Johnny's course, and I have the official Delphi FDA-approved blood flow restriction device. I think very highly of it. I think it has the true potential to be a game changer in the rehab and performance worlds. You know, we've talked a lot about loading today. And as you said, a lot of people are scared to load patients. Blood flow restriction, the science behind it has kind of showed that instead of needing to work at 70 to 80% of somebody's one rep max to create a hypertrophy response, we can work at loads as low as 20 to 30% of their one rep max.
Wow.
So something as simple as a straight leg raise might create a hypertrophy response in somebody's quads. I'm currently working with an elite Olympic weightlifter, and this is all over my Instagram and Facebook, and I've written blog posts on it. He's fine with me sharing this. But this guy went from, you know, squatting 6 days a week to having an ACL repair, ACL reconstruction with a meniscal repair. So he was non-weight bearing for 4 weeks as well. You know, you would obviously expect a ton of quad atrophy with that, but we implemented some BFR with him, and we were doing that twice a week for about 2 months, and actually his surgical quad was bigger than his non-surgical, and we ended up having to start doing BFR to the non-surgical side.
Wow.
To try to play catch up.
I've never seen
that, and I don't expect that there'd be any way other than with that modality that I would see that sort of response.
Yeah, I talked to Stefania Bell on the phone very briefly before the piece came out. She was kind of giving me a heads up, and she said, and she paused, and she said, this is going to be one of the biggest moves and changes and biggest things to grab onto in terms of physical therapy and strength and conditioning in the next 5 to 10 years. This is a big deal. It's going to shake a lot of cages and turn a lot of heads, and it just sounds interesting. What was the course like? Because I heard a little bit of it. I listened to some interviews on the Doc and Jock show with Johnny Owens. You mentioned that FDA-approved cuff, and I learned why it has to be approved. It's a medical device when you start cutting off blood flow. So what was the course like?
I actually wrote a blog post on that. So if anybody wants to go to thebarbellphysio.com, you can search for that course and see my more in-depth review. It was an awesome course, though. It was kind of half muscle physiology and half blood flow restriction. So we reviewed what does it really take to create a hypertrophy response. You know, simple formula for building muscle. Net protein gain equals muscle protein synthesis minus muscle protein breakdown. It was a very, very simple but effective analysis of what it really, really takes to build hypertrophy.
Betcha that's just a really cool review to get back into it in terms of people who aren't maybe necessarily doing strength and conditioning. It's good to get back to the basics. I've heard that a lot from different PTs doing this podcast is, listen, you cover the basics in PT school, and sometimes maybe you get away from them. You're not reviewing them every day, but it's good to get to the basics. So it's cool to hear that the first half of that course is muscle physiology, and then the second half is, all right, now what are we doing to augment that physiology, or what are we doing to change it a little bit?
Awesome amount of research review on what the initial research, and I don't know if you can even call it initial because there's been so many studies on it now, BFR has the potential to do, from like a growth hormone release, which will help tendons and ligaments heal faster. Man, the potential for it to help in bone healing. What does that mean? You know, when we have an athlete right now that comes in with a stress fracture, what options do you have? You don't have a whole lot. There's
nothing,
not much
yet
you can do. And if BFR, if this early research on that for bone health or bone healing pans out, man, it could be a game changer for people trying to get back on the playing field really, really soon. Stuff is as crazy as they've got athletes on a bike or walking on a treadmill with the blood flow restriction units on, and they're getting hypertrophy responses and VO2 max increases. That doesn't happen with anything else. You don't get a VO2 max response and a muscle growth response with any training modality. Those two things are typically working against each other.
What are some patients, and in what way are you using this? Or what's the first thing you did when you got back? Because I've heard before, when you take a Con Ed course and you come back on Monday morning, you're ready, and you're just looking for that first patient to to try that thing, that new toy. You want to break that new toy out on that first patient you can. What are some different ways? You mentioned the weightlifter you're working on, the quad strength after the ACL reconstruction and the meniscal repair. What are some other cool things you're doing with this?
Several athletes right now with stress fractures, and obviously I'm using that for the potential for bone healing. But also, you know, if that doesn't work, you know, this athlete, when that bone heals, whether from the BFR or just the time aspect, they want to be back to 100% as soon as possible. They don't want to take 4 weeks to regain their strength. So I've got patients coming in that are in a walking boot because they've got a stress fracture in their lower leg, and we put BFR on them, and they go walk with the BFR unit on for 15 minutes or to try to decrease the amount of atrophy they have in that leg or promote a little bit of hypertrophy. For me, has been the coolest thing is hopefully I'm fast forwarding the return to sport stuff.
Yeah, and that's ultimately what any athlete wants is they're literally looking at their watch saying, when am I going to be done? When am I going to be that guy I was before I hurt myself? So hearing something like this is cool, and just the way Stefania Bell was talking about it, I mean, she paused and she's like, trust me, this is going to be something cool. You're definitely going to want to pay attention to this. So I'm looking forward to that. We'll definitely check out that blog post that you had written. You can check it out at thebarbellphysio.com. Now, you do a great deal of promoting yourself, creating a presence, really. And that's something you have to do, especially in this day and age. And you have the ability to do it. You can leverage technology with Twitter and Facebook and a website and Instagram. So what is a brand new young PT like I might be in a couple months if I can ever get out of here and graduate? What's something I need to pay attention to in creating my online presence? What do I need to do that?
Whether it's an online presence, a physical business, or whatever, you've got to start with building something that's recognizable. The PT Pintcast, it's a unique name. People know that it's a podcast. They know it's about physical therapy. You've got an awesome logo to go along with it. So you've created something that's recognizable. That's why I went with the Barbell Physio. I wanted people to know that I'm a physical therapist, that I am somehow involved in the strength and fitness world. You know, I'm consistent with using my logo and my colors and things like that so that I create that recognizable brand. I think that's probably something a lot of people skip out on. They just want to call it Zach Long PT. You know what? If I'm Gray Cook, I can pull that off.
Right.
Everybody's going to listen to Gray Cook. But I think going with that recognizable brand name might be a little bit of a fast forward and help people remember you quicker.
Yeah, we were actually talking about names of clinics, and my roommate's father has owned, started, and then sold a bunch of clinics, and he's still in the PT game. And we talked about how sometimes clinics, you can't tell the difference between if it's a club or a PT clinic. A lot of names like Evolution. They just sound like they're breaking into the thesaurus and cracking out the trendiest sounding name, and you can't tell if it's a dance club or a PT clinic. So sometimes maybe we overthink that just a little bit.
Yeah, sometimes we do. I'm not a branding expert. I think you don't have to go with, you know, that trendy name, but you got to make sure it's recognizable. You got to make sure it's something that's going to stick in people's heads. And when they see you the second time, they'll never forget you the second time.
That's a good point. Be memorable, but for the right reasons, and make sure you explain yourself pretty easy. And the Barbell Physio, I pretty much know within a couple mile radius of what you're doing just by the name on that Twitter tag.
The second key that I just said is, they got to see you the second time. If you go and you put a great Instagram video out and you don't do that again for a week or a month or something like that, you got to have some consistency if you want people to see your brand. You got to do something crazy like post every day for 30 days or commit to sharing 3-4 times a week or writing a blog post every other week or every week or whatever.
We say pay attention. We're trying to get people to pay attention a lot. And attention is a form of currency because you only have so much of it. So if you're going to try to get people's attention, you do need to step in front of them on a regular basis, often, and make sure you consistently put out that good information. But you definitely needed to keep doing it. You can't be a one-hit wonder, because one-hit wonders go away.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, so each episode is a pint. You're having a bourbon. But before we're done with the pint, we have some shots, some parting shots. So if you're going to leave some PTs or some student PTs out there listening with a clinical pearl of wisdom, what would you want to leave in the back of their brain?
One of my favorite sayings is, don't stop fishing till the nets are full. So when things are going really well, when you're on a roll, keep working hard, keep consistent. Don't rest just because you've hit that goal. Always set the next goal.
I like that a lot. I've heard similar sentiments, not just in physical therapy, but in sports, in life, in terms of personal development. So that's a good note to leave on. Again, want to make sure people can get in on this valuable resource, globalperformancesummit.com. That's May 9th to the 16th. no travel, and no admission fee for the Global Performance Summit. And you can get a lot of good information out of that. You can check him out online at thebarbellphysio.com, along with his blog, and on Twitter, ZLongDPT is the Barbell Physio. Zach, appreciate you coming on here and spending some time and having a bourbon with us.
No problem, man. Enjoyed it.
Follow us on Twitter at PT Pintcast and online at PTPintcast.com. It's like TMZ, except with way more important information. And no Miley Cyrus. Okay, it's not like TMZ at all. The PT Pintcast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. Our lawyers made us read that.